Other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Tuesday, April Fool's Day.
It is, and I haven't really seen anything that's that funny yet today. I'm kind of disappointed. My mom texted me and said that she'd cycled to the pub.
Yeah.
And I texted her back and I was like, is that an April Fool's? And she's like, no.
Oh, really? She actually meant it.
I was like, oh.
Wow.
Why would you do that?
Yeah.
So
it's
that
not
was
something that she usually does.
No. Oh, she was like, I'm so unfit. I was like, yeah, April Fool's. And she was like, no, I really did.
Oh, wow. I know there's probably a lot of jokes going to go on today and stuff. I'm trying to, I know even Facebook wasn't that full of stuff in the, this morning.
No, so. And I've seen like someone just said, I'm engaged, and that's just boring, though.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
It's so, like, ugh.
I know, it's easy to fall for it, because it could be true, you know?
Yeah, but it's like, come on, be original.
Yeah, exactly, you know?
And especially when you've been with your boyfriend for, like, 6 years, it could be true.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's
true,
just,
huh?
Like, a stupid joke, you know?
It is. Nobody will get it.
Right?
And you'll get, like, hundreds of congratulations and stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And then you'll just go, oh, April Fool's, and people are going to be really pissed.
No, and like, okay, so right now there's this thing going around for women for breast cancer awareness, and I liked my friend's mom's status. I can't remember what it was. It was something about getting out of a parking ticket. So I liked it because I was like, oh, cool, she got out of a parking ticket. Right. I get a message from her, and she's like, oh my gosh, love, I'm sorry you fell for it like I did. So now you have to pick one of these statuses and post it because it's all for breast cancer awareness. And the British version is to take a selfie with no makeup on. And then when you put the selfie on Facebook, you tag three people. So you're kind of nominating. And it's gone around a lot. Like, I've seen so many. And it's really cool to raise awareness because everyone kind of knows what it's for. So because my friend's mom said, she sent it to me. I was like, damn, now I really have to do it. And I really don't like these chain things.
Uh-huh.
But I was like, I have to. She's like, please don't let me down. She's had she suffered from breast cancer. She's a survivor.
Yeah.
So I was like, I have to.
Yeah. It's a small favor.
But all these statuses were really dumb.
Really?
So I picked the only one that kind of wasn't that weird. Mm-hmm. It was won $7,000 on a scratch card.
Yeah.
Okay. I got so many. I think it got something like 80 something likes. I got all these text messages, calls. My mom was like, did you really win? And I was like, oh my God, I have to delete it.
Yeah.
Everyone thought I'd won $7,000.
Oh my God.
I was like, this was a terrible idea. I was like, I posted it. I did my dues by posting. Now I have to delete this because my phone, my everything was just blowing up.
Wow.
And I couldn't keep track of all the women that were liking it to message them and be like, oh, look, you have to pass this on. And I was like, this is way too much time I'm taking on this. Like, I can't.
Oh, God.
I had to take a deep breath and be like, if I'd won $7,000 on a scratch card, I wouldn't be posting it on Facebook.
Yeah,
firstly.
Exactly.
But it was very overwhelming. But it's kind of one of those things, like a joke that.
Yeah, too much work, like you said, you know.
But it was, and if it had been anyone else that had messaged me, I wouldn't have done it. But I just felt obliged.
Yeah.
But they just completely, like, went crazy. I didn't think it would get that much attention.
Wow.
I was like, oh God.
I know. That's the thing about Facebook. You don't know who's going to see it, you know? Especially you have a few hundreds, a few thousands of friends and stuff. And I mean, not many people, the percentage of people that actually press like or comment is very small.
Mm-hmm.
So the majority of the people see it, but they don't say anything.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to realize, even though you don't get any responses, a lot of people are seeing what you're writing, you know?
Yeah.
So you really have to think about it.
Yeah, never again will I. Well, then I feel bad saying that, you know?
It's yeah.
It's for a good cause.
Maybe just make your own like a contribution to the cause, you know, and just put a post that's more like what you want to say.
I know. Yeah, definitely. Next time I definitely will be not posting one of the statuses again. So I apologize anyone that liked that and got a Facebook message from me.
Yeah. $7,000 would have been cool. It would be life changing.
Oh my God, it would be nice, cool, though. It would be very nice. I wouldn't be complaining.
Yeah, I'm sure. So how are you supposed to have won this now on the post? Did it say?
No. It literally just said I just won $7,000 on a scratchy.
Oh wow.
That's what it said.
Yeah.
So I just copied, pasted, and it people liked it. God, go away, people. And the thing was, a lot of my good friends texted me and was like, you didn't really win that, did you?
Did you win? So
because
they
knew that I wouldn't post that.
Yeah, that you would have told them probably. Yeah.
So then I felt even worse when it was people that I didn't really know or like that were liking this. And I was like, oh, man.
Wow, that's funny. So this morning it's turning into winter. Did you know that it rained last night?
Well, I've noticed the past couple mornings, I've gone out to my car and it's been wet.
Right.
And I was like, when did it rain?
Yeah. I don't know about the previous night, but last night, and I saw it on the news, they were saying that rain is coming late. So I stayed up till about 1 and I saw it start to rain. It wasn't strong like it never is in LA, but nevertheless, it rained. And the funny thing was, I wake up this morning and the sky is like cloudless. There's no cloud. In like 20 minutes, we're getting rain clouds again, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't get it. But they said tomorrow is probably going to rain too. So, but it's cold outside, right?
It is. I mean, it's gone. It's crazy how, I mean, in January, I was laying out by the pool.
Right.
And in April, I'm freezing cold. I need a jacket.
Well, you want it in LA, you know?
Yeah.
The weather is not as perfect as it used to be anymore.
I know. I'm realizing more and more downsides of LA these past couple months. I tweeted something yesterday about the earthquakes.
Uh-huh.
And I got so many tweets back saying you shouldn't live in LA if you don't expect earthquakes, and about that's what you get in LA. There's millions every year, but you only feel a sudden. I was like, I was just saying I'm scared.
I know. We don't have to make a big deal out of it.
I'm sorry. I won't say anything again.
I know. I know. It's scary. But you know what? You have to live somewhere. You know, everywhere you're going to go, there's going to be problems. You
exactly.
know? You can't live in fear all your life. You know, you just can't do it. It's not going to get you anywhere. So, So we'll see. It'll probably rain some more, but. You know, I don't mind rain. I love rain. I wish we'd have some more before the summer.
It makes me feel like I'm at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of
like makes it feel cozy outside, I think, when it rains. You know, it's dark and gray and, I guess, you know, if I lived in a place like, like England where it rains a lot, I probably wouldn't like it as much. Yeah, it's like it gets old, you know. But here I just want some change, some variety and stuff, but it's not happening. So what can you do? Mm-hmm. In the studio, we have a special guest. We're going to bring him in a couple minutes. And I wanted to just discuss a couple of things. This thing grabbed me. Sexy celebs in their 50s. Obviously, it grabbed me because I'm in my 50s. And the amazing thing is, you know, when we look at celebrities, we don't think of them like being older, you know, because we remember seeing them as young.
Yeah.
Many of them have a lot of work done on their faces and stuff. And like, you know, I mean, can you think of like one of the worst facelift you've ever seen? Like, let me tell you who I think looks the most ridiculous. First of all, they have this thing that's called the Joker smile. Do you know what that is?
When the lips have been...
When it's like this, you know, and it creates like a triangle, you know, when your mouth is pulled sideways and stuff. Yeah. And you know where you can find it is on Mickey Rourke. Do you remember Mickey Rourke? Well, he was before your time, but he used to be very handsome. He was a movie like 9 1/2 Weeks and Diner, and like in the 80s, he was in a lot of movies. And very handsome guy. Today you look at him and he looks like a truck hit him.
Really?
You know? Yeah, and there's a lot of people like that. So I don't get it. But on the other hand, you know, you get a lot of people that are still looking good.
Yeah.
And mostly women, you know. I mean, or no, that's not true. I mean, there's men too. And, you know, you get like George Clooney and David Duchovny and Johnny Depp and all them, you know. And but let me tell you, man, you
get to your 50s. Michael Jackson had a lot of work.
Yeah, Michael Jackson had a lot of work.
One.
But all these people are looking great, you know. I mean, these people I mentioned are not people that had work, but people in their 50s, so that are still looking good. And mostly these people don't look like they had surgery, you know, like Denzel Washington, Eddie Murphy.
I'm sure that most of them just have a little Botox and fillers here and there to kind of spread out the wrinkles.
That's true.
And they also probably have a little bit of makeup on in these photos.
Yeah, they do, some of them, yeah. I'm sure.
I mean, when you're in the entertainment industry and you're in the public eye, a lot of people don't think that aging naturally is okay.
Right.
And but I'm trying to think, gosh, what's her name? Oh, my God, I can't remember. But she's in Mamma Mia. I love that movie. The main lady in that, the older lady. Anyway, okay. Meryl Streep, thank you.
Okay.
She, like, I'm sure she's had fillers and Botox and a little bit of work done, but she's just aged gracefully.
Yeah.
She really has, and she's a veteran in the entertainment industry.
Right.
And I think that more people need to go that route and realize that you don't have to be perfect.
Right.
Like, viewers aren't expecting you to look perfect and
right.
But look, you like know you're what 20 years old.
Yeah. From where you're sitting, it's easy to say, though. You know, once you hit your 50s, man, you like, you know, you look and you go, wait a minute, you know. It's not the same. You know? I'm not having as much fun anymore. So, yeah, you know. But look, on the other hand, though, you feel fortunate because at least you reached that age, you know.
Definitely.
I mean, many people, you know, don't get to reach that age, you know, if they die or something happens. So it's a good thing. But let me tell you, man, it's not fun aging. Let me tell you, it's not fun. So anyway, let's bring in our guest who's sitting here patiently. And I understand you guys met in the elevator.
We
have Chris Brosnan in the studio. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Good morning. Thank you.
Get closer to the mic so we can hear you.
I'm already intimate.
Yeah, there you go. And yeah, when I Googled you and stuff, what I was getting is Pierce Brosnan's son, actually, for Chris Brosnan. So then I realized you probably are not, because if you were, you would tell me.
I would have done.
So, yeah. So, but nevertheless, great name. Brosnan, that's a British name, right? Would you say? Irish name.
Yeah, the seed of the name Brosnan actually comes from a place called Castle Island in Kerry in Ireland.
Uh-huh. So is that where you're from, Ireland?
I was born in West London.
Oh, in West London. Okay.
Yeah, I was born in West London to Irish parents, so hence my Brosnan surname.
Yeah, I guess a lot of Irish people in England and stuff, since it's so close.
they say Kilburn and Liverpool are the capital of Ireland.
Really, huh?
Part of West London and part of the north of England.
Yeah. So, did you say West London?
Yeah, West London, Shepherd's Bush.
Is that like a good area, part of town?
It's not bad. It's next to Holland Park, which is very nice, thank you.
Okay.
And then from there, Notting Hill Gate.
I see. Okay. So so that's a nice part. It's not like Liverpool or anything like that.
And it's not like Sheffield.
nothing like Sheffield. God bless Sheffield. What would we do without those mixing towers?
It's true. Sheffield did a lot for England.
It's got quite a skyline. Google Sheffield, people, and check out the skyline of Sheffield.
Really? What's going on with it?
No, it's the Steel City. So it's all big manufacturing buildings.
Oh, okay.
Very industrial.
I mean, yeah, not a lot of them are working. Well, I don't think any of them are working anymore. But the big, like
cooling towers?
Yeah, that have, gosh, I can't speak this morning.
Steam.
Thank you. I really can't talk today. That have steam coming out of them.
There's a sketch on SNL that they do this. It's like they complete what they say.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure for me to be here for you this morning. In the lift, we were talking about things like marmalade and rich tea biscuits.
Well, that must have been a long elevator ride. I mean, you guys already know where you're from.
We covered a lot on the only four floors, so, you know.
The best things about England, for sure, rich tea biscuits and the candy, which you can get at Bristol Farms. They have a great British chocolate section.
Really?
Great.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
How about cream tea?
Mm,
That's scones or scones yeah. for you?
Scone.
Scones.
Scone.
She's been here too long. Relax.
That, no, that's a difference between the north and the south.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Oh, now we're starting.
Do you say grass?
The great grass.
I say grass.
Do you say bath or bath?
Bath.
Bath.
Oh, so you're saying that actually some people in England do speak more like they do here, right? Like the bath and the
well, technically,
and the grass.
The I that's what I say. I say bath, grass.
But is that because you're here?
No.
No.
That's from where I grew up.
Okay,
that's
gotcha.
From the north, which is not as... We don't speak as nice in the north.
You know what? If you want great examples of the north of England, watch Game of Thrones.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Watch Game of Thrones, because everybody on Game of Thrones talks like that.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, put that sword down, I'll start come at thee.
That's exactly how my grandparents talk.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, and it's hard to understand.
It is. Sometimes, I mean... Going to places like Newcastle and even where I'm from in Sheffield, going home, I'm like, what are you talking about? I have no idea what you're saying.
Well, one of the most bizarre things about the United Kingdom and you know, obviously including Ireland, is the dialects, which is what we're talking about. The mm-hmm. different dialects for such a small island are yeah. unbelievable.
Yeah.
So if you go to the west of the country, you have, if you like, the Dorset, Somerset accents. And down in Dorset, they all talk like they came from the Lord of the Rings, which is right. where Tolkien wrote it from. Because they all talk like that.
Right.
And it's been a lovely day down here, and here's the weather, and look, there's a blackbird. So they talk like that. And then if you go to where you come from, up north of England, they suddenly talk like that.
Yeah.
yeah.
And then go further north, and suddenly you're in Scotland, and they all talk like that. And it's completely different yet again. And then cross the channel and go to Ireland, and it's, oh, hello, how are you this morning? You're doing very well. It's nice to see and meet you. What a fine day it is with a few clouds, but it's nice and bright.
You're good at accents.
Yeah, you're very good at accents.
What about, can you do Welsh?
Oh, Welsh is lovely.
Welsh is my favourite.
There are, you see, Welsh Wales, and go there and try and pronounce a street sign.
Yeah, wow.
In Wales, Sam, you have to, it's the L's. They're the ones that get you. You have to learn to go like Llafrin Dofrin Dŵr.
And they have their own language.
Of course, Celtic Welsh.
Yeah.
Yachida.
And then there's Newcastle, Liverpool.
It's funny,
there's millions of
Celtic, isn't it Celtic?
Celtic.
Celtic. Is it with a C, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, it's say Celtics here.
And we say Celtic.
Right, exactly. But, I mean, a C and an E, how can you read that as K? I don't, you know.
We invented the language, Sam.
That's true. I can't argue with you about that. I know. I mean, there's just so much culture coming from the UK. You know, I mean,
there is.
It's been around for millennia, and obviously for the United States, there's a lot of influence from there because most of our founding fathers came from there. And but you know, and it's still, you know, a unique place. You know, there's still royalty there and everything, but it's not the way it used to be, but still tradition and so forth, you know.
Well, I was involved in a project recently where we were working with traditional Irish mythology. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about mythology that's as old as Greek mythology. So it goes back culturally far to a form of storytelling, traditional oral storytelling passed down through oral tradition through generations and generations. The Irish hero Finn McCool, for example, and now right here in LA, down in Santa Monica on Main Street, you guys have got Finn McCool's pub.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if many people in LA know who Finn McCool is.
Probably not. You know.
Ancestrally, to the Irish-American people here, though, he's very important.
Right.
So because in tracing your roots back to your origin, where you come from, is very important to people, learning about your ancestry and that journey is incredibly important. And, for instance, that Irish connection of Irish-Americans here is vast. In America, check this out, there are over 36.8 million Irish-Americans.
Wow. And I believe that, though, because many people say, hey, I'm Irish, you know, Irish ancestry or something.
That's right.
Go on.
Well, Ireland itself only has 4.5 million.
Really? Wow.
So if you think about that, as far as divergence is concerned, and moving away, if you like, you know, you think about the potato famines, and then there were the people who were shipped over to Australia for misbehaving.
Right.
So you've got this amazing group of people, and the Irish are very hardworking people who went out into the world to create a new life, and they saw America as that land of opportunity and literally got on the boats and over they came.
Right. And but obviously still a lot of influence around the world, Australia, you know.
Absolutely,
many parts of Asia, Africa, of course, South Africa. You know, so, I mean, there's so much history. I love British history because, you know, it's always like they've been there at the forefront and always seem to be the good guys, you know. I mean, maybe not from other cultures' perspectives, you know, not the conquered ones, but from the West perspective, you know. I mean,
yeah.
England's always been there to come in and save the world, so to speak, you know.
Well, yeah. Certainly united with the United States of America. I mean, that's for sure. I mean, right. There is definitely a bond between the United Kingdom and the United States of America. And we've right. seen that over the last goodness knows how many yeah. years now.
Right.
Where we will walk together, literally. We will walk together.
Right.
And we do.
Exactly. But, you know, I mean, in European wars and stuff like that, the Americans were not involved in the beginning. And it was England who was there to counteract all the evil forces in Europe, you know? Yeah. So, and I'm not talking just about World War II, World War I, but you've had many wars, sure. You know, yeah. Waterloo, you know, with Napoleon mm-hmm. and all that. Sure. So a lot has happened, and the British have always been the ones to sort of like bring peace back. You know,
absolutely. I mean, it's remarkable, really, if you think about the size of the United Kingdom in comparison to, for right. instance, North America.
Right.
It's tiny. It right. fits into the United States many, many, many times
it's
over.
It's around the size right. of Florida.
Yeah,
is
absolutely.
It really?
Yeah, wow. The state of Florida.
And
yeah.
so for such a tiny little place, you're right. It's certainly been at the forefront of peacemaking, but you know, it also has its own checkered past with regards yeah. to the empire side
right,
of what
exactly.
you know, the mm-hmm. United Kingdom was about.
Exactly.
But what I would say is that culturally it has brought a lot to the world.
Right. Exactly. And that's what I'm saying also. It's like, yeah, the British were conquerors and things like that, but the point is that every place they touched is now thriving, you mm-hmm. know? And, you know, the places that they didn't go, people are still living in the Stone Age. So what's so bad about that? You know what I'm saying? You know, but, okay, we'll debate that some other time and stuff.
Okay.
But, but no, some places are like that, you know, yeah. Where they're small and they have a lot of, like, influence or they're in the news all the time. You know, like Israel, for example, very small, insignificant on the map. You can't even cover it with your thumb. Mm-hmm. And in the news all the time, you know, a lot yep. going on there. So a place doesn't have to be big for stuff to be happening there, yeah. you know. And, yeah, so England is full of yeah. culture, and I simply love it there, you know. So let's leave England and move on to something else now.
Okay.
We've killed half a show on just England. But, hey, we've got two here, you know, two people from there. It was inevitable, you know.
You don't feel cornered.
No, not at
we'll
all.
We'll serve tea in a minute. Don't worry.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you find the women in England to be as beautiful as Charlotte and everything was she unusual?
Sam, there's a corner. Goodness me. My wife's listening to this show right
That's
now.
Okay. I mean, you can,
so what I'm going to say
you can have
you
an opinion about beautiful
sure.
women, right?
Okay. Well, first of all, I find all human beings to be beautiful, and that's my truth.
Okay.
Absolutely. Every single
that's
one
That's a cop
of us,
out, but okay.
Every single one of us has a unique beauty, without
right.
a doubt.
Right.
And obviously, Charlotte, right. very beautiful. My wife is from Canada.
Okay.
And she's stunning.
Yeah.
6'3", my wife is.
Really?
Absolutely.
So wow. I think the moral of that story is not a lot of British people. I'm kind of digging through yeah, what you were saying.
He's evading the question.
Go ahead.
The British females aren't necessarily the most attractive.
Now, you're speaking on behalf of the British females now, not me.
I think American, Canadian, I think that there's a lot more beautiful people, women, physically in America. I haven't been
maybe.
To Canada that many times, so I can't speak from Canada. But from what I've seen, especially in Los Angeles and Florida.
Yeah, well, here every...
But and exactly. Like
yeah,
I'm,
all I've, the beautiful people come here, though, from all
exactly.
over the world, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But just from the people that I've interacted with in my life in America compared with the people in England. And I think it's to do with being tan.
Right.
And just lots of different things that America brings to you.
Right.
But from my experiences, I
okay.
think that... Americans are pretty good. I feel bad saying that.
No, that's fantastic. Fine. I mean, but
and I think you agree to some extent.
But that's the point, though. I mean, there are many beautiful British women as well, you know, and men. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just, I think we have more people here. That's why there's a bigger selection, you know. And plus in L.A., I mean, being in L.A. totally distorts your picture of the world, you know. I mean, no really place does. In the world do you have such a convergence of talented people, that's beautiful right. people,
yeah.
at least physically beautiful people. But you're right. Everybody is like, they have their own beauty and stuff.
Absolutely.
And so, I'm sorry, did you have something to
no,
say?
No, I agree with you. Yeah, no, no.
what I was going to say, actually, picking up on that point, is that America, I find that the majority of Americans are far more open than a lot of English people, and that's for sure. England is it's a very small island. We've discussed that. It's a very condensed place.
Right.
And you know yourself, in Sheffield, you can literally live in a house that's no more than 20 feet wide.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Literally, with about maybe 30 foot above. So 30 foot by 20 foot wide, and house after house after house next to each other.
Wow.
Well, if you ever watched the show Coronation Street,
you were going to say that.
It'll show you exactly what I mean by that. And what that's bred in a lot of people from the United Kingdom is a narrow sort of consciousness, a vision of life.
Yeah.
Now, I'm lucky enough to have traveled the world and done some amazing things. But interestingly for me, in America, I find Americans to be far more open.
Definitely.
To opportunity, to growth, to spirituality, to conversation. And of course, there are pockets that are challenged by that. And there is always somewhere somebody who's going to feel that that's not accurate. But in my experience of being here, I would say that American people and the American consciousness is far more open.
Mm.
And that's one of the reasons that I'm here right now.
Awesome. And let's get to that a little bit. And so let's start with the project you're working on, and then we'll kind of go back and see how you came to do it and all that. So a Wild Nobility, right?
Wild Nobility.
Okay, tell us what that is.
Okay, a Wild Nobility, basically, it's a consciousness. It's a consciousness around preserving our youth. And when I say preserving our youth, it also means protecting our youth from an adult standpoint against the abuse that children suffer.
Right. And, and there's a lot of it, right? I mean, it's like you hear about it everywhere, you know? I mean, they bust, like, rings of child porn and things like that, you know? And you wonder who can, you know, I mean, what human being can do these things to other human beings, especially young people?
Absolutely. Well, as a race of human beings, I'm going to generalize here, but as a race of human beings, not only are we capable of being incredibly beautiful towards each other, we also have a history of being able to be very dark towards each other. And if we look back at things like the Holocaust, and if we look back at other sort of genocides that have gone on, we can see that.
Right.
But we can also see in neighborhoods the amount of incredible community projects there are, the amount of consciousness there is around how we act as adults and how we mentor our young people. And there are many other charities that are based around helping each other out. But my point there is, though, that there is this balance between light and dark, and you do get to choose, Sam, whether you're actually going to work on the light side of consciousness of human being or you're going to work on the dark side, literally. And that may sound very George Lucas and Star Wars to you, but it's the truth. You have a consciousness that tells you this is right and this is wrong.
So light being right, dark being wrong.
If you like, okay, so absolutely. We have invented as human beings the conception of light and dark. And if you like, dark behavior is described as being, for instance, let's talk about pedophilia and child abuse.
Right.
That is, would you say, not a dark behavior? Mm-hmm. Whereas a light behavior, for instance, would be helping a child to grow through mentorship, through them expressing themselves in a safe, clear, you know, supportive environment where they can shine.
Right.
Right.
I would say that is the definition between, for instance, light and dark in that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So the project, A Wild Nobility, what it's about adults coming forward and being able to make a stand for our kids. Because statistically in the world right now, we are at the worst point as far as abuse is concerned and taking advantage of children is concerned globally. It's a global issue. It's not just about the United States or the United Kingdom or France, anywhere. It's a global issue.
And I would imagine in some cultures it's probably like acceptable, right? I mean, you know, because like in some Muslim countries you can take a 14, 13-year-old girl and marry her. and do things to her and stuff. And that's what I'm saying, you know. So in some places it's acceptable, and we won't even touch on the people that abuse the 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds, but even at 13 they're still kids, you know. Mm-hmm. And to do these things to them, and it's totally acceptable. So,
okay, so the boundaries between culture and how we see and how we represent ourselves in culture is a conversation that we need to take responsibility for with somebody from that culture, right. So that they're represented in a way that is balanced. Rather than from us looking in and judging, we need to, for them to be able to sit and discuss with us why that's culturally acceptable.
Right, but I mean, just let's ask from just a human perspective. How can that possibly be a good thing? To take a 12, 13-year-old girl from her family, you know, and just, you know, use her, whatever. Because I can't imagine a 50-year-old man marrying a 13-year-old girl that he would want her for any other reasons than for sex, you know.
Okay, so I hear what you're saying. And my stand on that issue is that I don't agree with it.
Okay.
It's personal to me, though.
Okay.
My judgment on that is that I don't think that a 13-year-old girl should be forced into a marriage.
Right.
I don't believe that.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Yeah, because she has no say. She's not old enough to know what she would want to do.
Right.
Absolutely.
But the reason I brought it up is just because I don't know that in any culture it would be humanly okay to do that. But that's what I'm saying. And like you said, you need to talk to people from that culture. But yep. But I don't know. It doesn't matter what they say. I still can't justify doing something like that. But so tell us a little bit about your childhood. You must have like intimate knowledge and experience with all this stuff, right?
Sure.
I mean, did this come based on experiences that you went through?
Based on experience that I went through. So as a child, I was abused. I went through quite an abusive childhood.
Did you grow up at home with parents?
I did.
Both your parents?
My mother and stepfather, one of those classic scenarios. And unfortunately, although my parents at the time did the best that they could, they were acting out of how they had been taught to parent. And unfortunately, their way of parenting was, you know, it was the physical abuse that's okay. You know, the getting the strap out and getting, wow. You know, the whatever object was available to either beat you with or assault you with in some way. And, you know, as we're evolving as a conscious race of beings, we're understanding more and more that that is not how you teach mm-hmm. a child that you deal with issues that are yeah. going on at home or with behavior.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because there's nothing that a kid does, let's face it, there's really nothing that a child does that excuses a physical beating.
Right.
And we're talking about, I mean, for instance, I grew up with it literally from a very, very early age, from the age of 1 or 2 all the way right up until I was 16 or 17. My wow. mother, for instance, felt that it was acceptable to physically assault me.
Wow.
But what she was doing, yeah. she was taking out her past abuse issues on me, on what mm-hmm. she saw as love.
Right.
So how she had been treated by the people who said that they loved her,
right.
she was perpetuating.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then it passes on for generations until somebody stops
until somebody stops mm-hmm. it. And you've got to do that. You've got to step up and you've got to stop it. Now, I'm not saying that's easy, because I've done a lot of work. You know, I've done a lot of work in therapy, and I'm not ashamed to say that I sought help.
Right.
I mean, by the time I was 16 years old, I'd ran away. I was on the streets of London. I didn't
really?
Want to be at home.
Yeah.
And so I lived on the streets of London, literally. I used to actually live at one point in the toilets in Waterloo Station in London.
God.
And I fell into prostitution.
So, really?
Yeah. So I became,
at age 16?
Age 15.
15. Oh
I,
my
I
God.
Became a child prostitute at age 15 years of age. Wow. So I know, fact on, that it goes on out there. But the statistics that we're talking about here today is that it's not stopping. It's growing. It's growing. It's mm-hmm. epidemic.
Wow.
In the United States alone, there are over 360,000 recorded cases of child sexual abuse every single year.
Wow.
Every year?
Every year.
Wow.
360,000 kids.
And those
there.
Are probably just the ones they know about.
That's
yeah,
the ones
recorded.
They know about. And that's the point, Sam. That's
right.
the ones they know about. And the Project Wild Nobility is about bringing awareness and consciousness to the fact that this is ongoing now. This isn't stopping.
Mm-hmm.
This is ongoing now. And why it's called a wild nobility is because uh-huh. I believe in all of us, there is, if you like, the protector. There is the human being that would stand up for a kid. If that child was standing there and you saw that abuse going on, you would stop it. Would
right.
you agree?
Yeah.
Yes.
And well, so I coined the phrase a wild nobility, because inside you there is that nobility. You would stand up for a child if you could.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, that's
it's powerful.
What, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, I've worked quite well, I've worked a lot with young men in serious issues themselves. You know, what I've done is I've taken my past and my life and I've turned it around. I've turned it around. I've looked at it. I've embraced what's gone on. I've figured out what went on. And I've been able to take that experience and put it into a practical use.
Right.
For instance, we're working on several reality shows here in the United States at the moment that are all based around awareness around child abuse issues. Shows, for instance, like Freedom, A Rite of Passage, which is a show about working with young offenders who have already crossed the line, who have already fallen foul of the law, got involved in drugs, got involved with alcohol and gangs, and they themselves have become the victims.
Right.
Even though they're perpetuating crime, they have become the victims of abuse from the past, and that's why they've become who they are in the situations they are.
Yeah.
So what we do with that youth at risk is we offer them the ability to change their lives. We offer them a gateway to stop now. To literally stop now, turn around, look at it, what it is that you're doing, and we'll help you the best we can.
Right.
Because trust me, sometimes that help isn't from home. Because most of those young offenders that are actually incarcerated right now here in Los Angeles County, what they'll do is they'll serve their time. They'll mix with an awful lot of other offenders who will teach them other ways to offend.
Right.
Their behavior will not change in any way. They'll feel more stigmatized. They'll feel more trapped. And right. they'll be released back into a community where they've done no real work whatsoever around their conscious behavior. And they'll go back into a community that will treat them exactly the same way as they did when they went into jail in the first place.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
And so nothing changes That's in the true. Pattern, Sam.
So you need to rehabilitate someone along the way there in that process. You need to, to sort of like short that
sure.
process and say, you know, if he's sitting in jail and stuff and we're going to release him back, let's at least give him some education, right?
Sure, absolutely. Not only should we give them some education and another opportunity, but what we need to do is re-educate the family they're going back to.
Mm-hmm.
Because if a child is being released, and let's face it, some of the young people being incarcerated in the United States are from the age of 11, 12, 13 years of age, exactly like you were talking about earlier on with the young girls being forced into marriage. Those kids are being then sent back to the home where an awful lot of abuse is still going on.
Yeah.
Right.
And all they're being shown is that this is how you live your life.
Yeah, mm-hmm. This is like the norm.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right.
Absolutely. Which is why these young people, they, you know, they go out and they commit the offenses they do. Some of them murder, and they'll go out and they'll pull a trigger and they'll end a life based on what they've been taught.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's a very important point. And that's one of the wild nobility puts forward to parents and people who are working with young people is right. that if you program a young child, and that's what we do, our brains are incredible computers. We absorb information constantly. If our subconscious minds absorb from a very early age what we're truly worth through how a parent is capable of treating us or how a family member is treating us or a close friend of the family, that blueprint falls into place.
Mm.
And that child then grows up to become either, you know, a young person with issues or an adult with serious issues.
Right.
And they think that this is okay because right. this is what they were taught.
It's a vicious cycle.
It's a vicious cycle, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what do we do about it? This is what I want to do about it. I want to make as much noise about it as possible. And we can't play that instrument today. That's okay.
We have a loud instrument here, but we can't really play it. But you'll tell us about it in a minute.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What is it? Tell us.
Well, it's an Australian about. Aboriginal instrument. It's called the didgeridoo. And the instrument itself is about 75,000 years old in its origin.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
And describe what it looks like and stuff.
A didgeridoo is traditionally, it's made from a hollowed out piece of wood that termites have eaten in the outback of Australia.
Oh, okay.
And then the didgeridoo master, or the Nungarai, which is the didge master's name in Australia, he will go out and he'll cut the didgeridoo in a specific length so it forms the right key to form a specific sound when the instrument is played.
Right. And you blow it like you would
a
flute or something.
Yeah. So Miles Davis.
Right.
Charlie Parker, these incredible guys who either blew the sax or the trumpet incredibly, and I'm great fans of both. They both were able to do an incredible thing called circular breathing, which means you breathe in air through your nose and out through your mouth at the same time.
Wow.
which is a remarkable gift.
Once yeah, you learn how do you how do that? I just tried. I did.
If you're listening at home, give it a go. See what you do.
That's but, like really hot.
So you have to learn to store the air in your cheeks.
Right.
And then as you force the air out of your cheeks, you breathe in your nose at the
same
time.
So that's how they play the instrument.
That's how you create the continuous sound with the instrument.
I see.
But most importantly for me, Sam, is that the instrument is created and played for a specific reason. And the reason that it's played, it's not actually a social instrument. It's an instrument that's created to celebrate the divine or God, or in the Australian Aboriginal culture, the dream time, which is the creation time. Mm. It basically works out to be exactly the same thing as what we believe, you know, in the West. It's just a different voice speaking about the same thing yet again. And if you look at the instrument, I mean, you can see that it's basically a pipe cut to a certain length, and that one over there is an F sharp.
Right.
So it creates a certain sound. But if you go into any good church, go into any cathedral in the world, you'll see an organ stand.
Right.
And on that organ stand, you will see, in some churches, over 150 to 200 different didgeridoos.
Wow. Really?
They're all exactly the same pipes, and then they're played to form certain key tonalities to exalt God, to create an environment and to create a vibration around us that exalts the divine, which is why we go to church to sing. We go to church to sing to exalt the divine. Mm-hmm. And when that instrument is played in the right way and it's played with the right consciousness, it is used to communicate with God directly. It's almost like the Aboriginal version of a telephone, so straight to God.
That's true,
And it's exactly the same as when you go to church and you sit and sing, and you're doing it for a particular reason.
Right. And now, how did you find out about this? I mean, why do you have a relationship with the instrument? Because it's Aborigine, and you're from England and stuff. How do you...
And you're very knowledgeable about
it. Listen, Sam, if you can work that out, tell me. okay, so this is the truth with that one for me. I was at a festival in the UK many, many years ago. This is over 25 years ago, called Glastonbury Festival. You must know that, right?
Yeah.
I actually went on to perform on the live on the main stage there, you know, afternoon to the 75,000 people.
Wow.
So it's quite a journey for me when I think about how I first got in touch with the instrument. I heard somebody playing it, but I heard this sound and I couldn't work out where the sound was coming from. And I stood looking for what is this sound?
Uh-huh.
And then I saw a guy sitting with his back to me. But when it's played, you must have heard earlier on, it's quite a resonant instrument. It really creates an amazing sound. So anyway, I found this guy and I went and sat next to him, right next to him. Didn't know who I was. I went and sat next to him for about 25 minutes and he didn't stop playing. And I was telling you about that circular breathing technique.
Uh-huh. Right.
The guy didn't stop playing. And I was amazed by the sound.
Yeah.
And when he did eventually stop and say, "Who are you and what are you doing sitting right next to me?" We got into a great conversation. He let me play. And as soon as I picked it up, I could play it. I couldn't circular breathe. That took a lot of practice, but I could play it. And something weird happens around this instrument. If you look online, Google didgeridoo, D-I-D-G-E-R-I-D-O-O.
Okay.
Google didgeridoo players around the world. And I've got on Facebook, I must have something like 1,000 didgeridoo player friends who've also got another 1,000.
Wow.
We're an underground movement.
Yeah. That's cool.
We're an underground movement of sound that's been given to us by the Australian Aboriginals, which is another way of passing down a tradition, right?
Yeah.
And so I became so hooked on playing it, and it actually shifted my consciousness, and that's the truth.
Oh, wow.
It helped shift my consciousness. I attracted the instrument to me. Mm-hmm. I started playing it on a very regular basis, and it helped me transform my life. And the reason that it was able to do that is that when you play the instrument, to play it properly and focus, you have to slow down your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You have to slow down. And you have to become very conscious in your breathing and the
technique breathing
you're
as well. That's what I was thinking. So it's like yoga in a way, you know.
Very much. Spiritual. It's like meditation.
Very
the longest I've ever played, the longest I've ever played without stopping is 5.5 hours.
Oh my God!
Constantly breathing.
Wow.
Constantly breathing.
5.5 hours. I couldn't sit there for 5 minutes doing this. I mean,
oh
how do you do that?
Well,
that's crazy.
Okay, so you asked the question, how did I connect with it? So yeah. After playing for a certain amount of time, and when I started playing the instrument, this is going back in the day, as I call it, there weren't any didgeridoo teachers. There was this one guy I'd met, and then I didn't ever see him again. I still don't know who he was. Maybe he wasn't really there. what I did was I went to the library, and I found Aboriginal Australian music, and I listened to it and listened to it and listened to it, and I thought, I know how he's doing that, and did a bit, but it never felt right. So eventually what I did was, through inspiration, I decided I would go to Australia and I'd find my Aboriginal teacher. And like any student who's ready, the teacher will appear.
Right.
And so I went to the Australian outback, and I went to the Northern Territory of Australia, near Darwin. There's a whole sacred area of land there to the Aboriginal people called Arnhem Land. Mm-hmm. And there's a community in Arnhem Land called Beswick. And in the Beswick community, there is an amazing seat, if you like. If in the didgeridoo world, it's kind of the seat of royalty, uh-huh, of the didge. And my Aboriginal teacher, who's passed now, his name was David Blanasi, B-L-A-N-S-I, Blanasi. So he taught me. He took me on and he taught me. And wow. I ended up promoting him tours around Europe and doing all sorts of stuff with a whole group of Australian Aboriginal men who form what's known as a corroboree, which is a ceremonial practice of sound and exalting the spirit and creation again.
Yeah.
So, I got stuck into it that way. And then I got connected to many, many people who wanted that sound on stage with them. So I started performing on stage with incredible people. I tell you, I've taken that instrument to Nashville and I've rocked with Keith Urban.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
Absolutely. Yeah. Unfortunately, last year, a dear, dear friend of mine passed away, a guy called Cowboy Jack Clement, who was Johnny Cash's writer, producer for many, many years. And Cowboy, literally, he loved the sound so much, he introduced me to what I call them the Dons of Nashville, Uh-huh. So I took the instrument around incredible places and played for Steve Earle, and I played for, the list goes on and on, but Dolly Parton loved it. All these people loved it. But people, when they hear the sound, uh-huh, they love it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's different. It's kind of weird. Yeah. It's not a sound that you're used to hearing.
Yeah.
And I just continued touring with it and touring with it and touring with it, and it grew and grew and grew, and I got pretty good at playing it,
So just for the listeners, the reason we're not playing it is it's pretty loud and we don't want to interrupt the show next door and stuff, but I guess if they go on YouTube or something, they can find
me on YouTube, for instance.
Really? Yeah. Okay, now in the last couple minutes, I wanted to bring up, I see you have like a campaign on Indiegogo. You want to talk about that?
Sure, absolutely. So the campaign that we're running on Indiegogo, if you don't know what it is, it's a crowdfunding platform. Basically, it's an opportunity for you to be able to raise funds for a project that you're working on. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be community-based. It could be the arts. It mm-hmm. could be film. It could be all sorts of things. Anyway, it's a platform for raising funds for a certain project. And right now what I'm doing is I'm raising funds for A Wild Nobility, because what I want to do is, people can't see me, obviously, because they're at home on the radio or computer, but I'm 6'5". I'm a big guy. My friends call me Bear.
Really?
Right? And when I play that instrument and I stand up on stage and I speak with conviction about what I'm passionate about, I make a lot of noise.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I'm not afraid to. I'm not afraid anymore. I own my past. I'm a beautiful human being in my own right, and I've healed much, and I'm on a mission somewhere to help other people feel the same about themselves.
Yeah.
I'll guarantee you this. There will be people listening to this show who have suffered abuse in their own lives that they've probably never been able to speak about.
Right.
Did you know that averagely, it takes somebody 22 years to even begin to start to talk about something they suffered as a child, as far as sexual? 22 years.
Wow.
So you're talking about mostly adults who have struggled, who struggle with lack of self-worth, who struggle with body issues, who struggle with, alcohol and drug addictions, and they wonder why.
Yeah.
Because all this stuff's been buried and suppressed, and there's a lot of anger there and pain.
Yeah.
A subject like this needs somebody like you.
Thank you.
Accepted and moved on and wants to help.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the campaign on Indiegogo, which is Indiegogo, Indiegogo.com, and then in their search bar you just put A Wild Nobility, and that's the campaign we're running. And what it's for is this: It's to publish the book, first of all, is to help publish the book. And then it's to actually take the book on tour to communities, to outreach places where people have been abused, kids have suffered abuse, to go to centers where abuses, you know, kids and young people have suffered from that, to go to like Johnny Cash did when he went on his tour of jails. I actually want to go to correctional facilities in the United States and Canada and in Europe where young offenders are being treated in a certain way with the system. And I want to show them and tell them a story that's different and how you can turn your life around.
Wow.
Because I came from that background, from abuse to drugs to gangs to alcohol, all that rubbish stuff that blocks your life up. Right. Turn it around and create something beautiful and different.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. And, you know, and that's a great story. And we could spend another couple hours with you just hearing about your life story. So maybe you
can
come back sometime.
I'd love to.
Are you like visiting now?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here for the next 3 months. I'll be here
for the next
3 months. And then I've got to go to Canada and probably back to the UK, but I'll be back here again.
Very cool.
I've got my goals here in LA. I've got my eyes on various networks and channels, and also Ellen DeGeneres, because I discovered yesterday, and I love this, that she has a record label called 1111. Now, my magic number is 1111.
Wow. Yeah, there you go. Weird, right? There you go.
And she likes weird and wonderful things like the didgeridoo and strange people, apparently. Hey, my hands are up, I admit it.
Well, we got to wrap up, Chris. We have Chris Brosnan. How can people find you? Do you have a website?
Yeah, sure. They can go to The Soul Shaman, or they can go to My Dream Sleep.
MyDreamSleep.
Yeah, it's another conversation. Yeah, MyDreamSleep.com, where I've invented sound that puts you to sleep without the need for using drugs.
Wow, awesome.
Wow.
And if people want to find you on Facebook and Twitter and everything, what's the best way to Google you? Because Chris Brosnan, like I said, brings up...
Put Bear in between them both.
Yeah? Chris Bear Bronson.
Bear Brosnan.
Oh, Brosnan. I'm sorry. Yeah, Bronson. Brosnan. And you can find him there and all the other stuff. Indiegogo.com, of course. Go and check it out. A Wild Nobility. Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sam, it's an honor to meet you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dear lady.
And you're a great...
How lovely to meet you.
You're a great man, and all the best to you. A great story, very inspiring. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Of
I appreciate
course.
Being here.
All right, Charlotte, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
see
everybody, for listening. See you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, right here on LA Talk Radio.